Hi, everybody. This is Phil Town.
And this is Danielle Town.
And welcome to the Invested Podcast, where we're talking about how to be a real investor, not a speculator in the markets, which is by definition what almost all of you are doing, in my humble opinion. You're investing in mutual funds and indexes, and basically you're speculating that somebody else knows more than somebody else, I guess, and hoping the market will go up. And just hoping the market will go up. And that's just by definition speculation. What we want to do as an investor is we want to buy things when we know their value and we're buying them on sale. That's actually investing. So you're probably better at investing going to a garage sale than you are with your 401k. I would strongly suggest.
You mean just sort of like naturally, if you're somebody who's never looked into investing or
if you're doing what everybody tells you to do. If you're doing what everybody tells you to do, you're putting your money into indexes in 401k, in your 401k. And I promise you, you go down to a garage sale and you see something that you know about and you know what it's worth and you know it's super cheap and you buy that, that is investing. You could turn around and sell it on eBay for more money than you did, than you just paid for it. And there are people who actually do that. That's
investing. Because you have a strong... I want to say strong certainty. I think it's actually impossible to what do you call that when you adjust something that's a certainty?
I have no idea.
What am I trying to say? Qualify. You can't qualify a certainty, but a strong opinion that something is going to be worth more than what it is you paid for it.
I like certainty. I mean, Buffett uses certainty.
Does he?
Yeah. He's definitely used the word certainty.
I just don't see how anybody investing... I mean, I understand investing. Yes, we've talked a lot about that. But I don't see how anybody can say that there's a certainty. Because you can't predict what's going to happen with other people. You can be certain that you are correct. But that doesn't mean that the market price is going to go to what is correct.
Okay, look it, though. You know, is the sun going to come up tomorrow? How certain are you that it will?
I'm certain.
Yeah, you're very certain. But does it have to?
No.
No, we could get hit by an asteroid and it would be no sun tomorrow.
Correct. All right?
So there is no such thing as infinite certainty, you know, the certainty of God or something. We don't have that capability, right? I mean, we don't, even if the sun comes up for everybody tomorrow, it might not come up for me, right?
The sun would come up for everybody, but not for you.
I would be dead.
Oh, you would be dead.
Hello.
So it would still come up. You just wouldn't see it.
Right. So what we're shooting for is human level of certainty. And when it comes to businesses, you're 100% right. There's no perfect certainty. Things can happen. But
yeah, I'm not sure
pretty
I compare
darn
it to the
certain
sun coming up.
Yeah, but I'm pretty certain Southwest Airlines will be around in 10 years. I'm pretty certain Delta will be around in 10 years. Yeah, you know, I have a high degree of certainty about that. Walmart, okay. I'd say very, very high degree of certainty. Amazon will be around in 10 years. I mean, there's not perfect certainty, but there's some things that are a lot more certain than others. That's for sure.
So let's go with a very high probability.
Okay, very high probability, high level of comfort, to the point that, and this is the key thing, to the point that you'd be willing to put almost all of your retirement money into that company.
Yeah, yeah.
To that level of comfort.
That is a very high level of certainty.
Yeah. That's where you got to be.
I mean,
that's where you got to be.
Yeah. That.
And then, yeah,
takes
we're going to diversify off
of
that a little bit.
Fortitude.
We'll diversify off that a little bit, but not stupidly. Stupid diversification is what everybody teaches you to do. Stupid diversification is over diversification. And they're telling you to do it for all the right reasons because they're afraid you're going to lose your money if you go out and do what I'm telling you to do.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, the world is full of people, academics and professional investors who truly believe that you can't beat the market, that it's a rare, rare investor who can beat the market, which is the hypothesis of modern portfolio theory that says literally you can't beat the market. That the only people who do are lucky. But there's now a greater and greater number of people who are investing in a certain kind of way, which has predictably beaten the market now for 80 years. through world wars and depressions and everything. And these investors are all doing it in exactly the same, not exactly, but in almost the same kind of way, which is by and large to follow what Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger have practiced for 60 years. And that is incredibly careful, patient investing, sitting on the sidelines for absurdly long periods of time relative to what professional investors are capable of doing, and then pulling the trigger really aggressively when you get the opportunity to buy something wonderful that's on sale. That is so hard for other professionals to practice. I can almost assure you that with a few exceptions out there, no one does, because pension fund money is what most of these professionals are investing for funds like, you know, CalPERS. And by the way, I just read that CalPERS, the largest investor in the country, $386 billion under management now.
Wow.
A single manager has total responsibility for this amount of money. And he has to hand it out to all these sub-managers,
yeah,
who then hand it out to more sub-managers.
Yeah.
And there are these layers of professionals who are extremely impatient with making sure that they're protecting those retirement funds for teachers. And they're not going to hang around for 2 years while, you know, some Warren Buffett wannabe sits there in cash. They're just not going to do it.
It's a really interesting incentive structure. And we just recorded our interview with Jacob Taylor, who's coming on in 2 weeks. And you guys, when you listen to it, you'll see we talk to him about this a lot because he's a fund manager and deals with this situation. And it's something that I think really affects the market itself. Like, the market overall is affected by these internal incentives that people choosing where they put this money are dealing with in their own lives. So it's something to be cognizant of. I don't think it's really going to change. I mean, we can talk about it. Hopefully, like, it does change a bit as we talk about it more and people become more aware of these perverse incentives out there. But I don't think it's really going to change that much. But I think as individual investors, being aware of those incentives, of people making choices based not necessarily on the greatness of the underlying company, is really important for me to know, like, what's going on when people are coming in and coming out of certain companies, buying and selling certain companies.
Well, modern portfolio theory has a really perverse result, and that is that it comes from the theory saying that everything is priced correctly all the time. And the result of this is kind of a complacency among 99% of people who manage money, is a certain kind of complacency that says that, well, we're going to do the best we can to beat the market, but we recognize that we probably won't. Therefore, we'll just buy a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And they spend all their time trying to buy better stuff than the other guys and buy 200 of those better stuffs, which means, I mean, come on, the S&P 500 is only 500 stocks. If you go out and buy 200 stocks, you are the market. You're not going to beat the market.
Right.
And so these guys take great pride in beating the market by a half a point.
Which is exactly what Charlie Munger was talking about in the Daily Journal meeting. He said exactly that. There's, by the time you've bought more than, I mean, he didn't give a number, but, you know, more than like a few companies, you have just become the market. You are diversified as much as the market. And to even have the idea that you would be able to beat it at that point is just kind of a logical fallacy, which...
Yeah, and listen, you guys, I mean, to be clear, most people should do exactly what Buffett and Munger tell them to do, which is to go get an index,
yeah,
and just go through the motions of investing, put your money into the market. And in the long run, if you start early enough and you leave your money in there, and if you put away 10% of your income before you pay taxes, before you pay anything else, you just go with that discipline, you will have more money than you can imagine by the time you retire. So this podcast is not for you guys who are able to do that.
I disagree with that. Yeah, I do. Because I think that even making that choice to put your money in an index is a conscious investing choice. And to understand what you've done with your money, to understand where your money is so... just necessary for when there's a downturn in the market overall, in that index, because otherwise you're going to be panicking, of course. I mean, I remember when the .com boom and then the bust happened, my grandma, my mom's mom, had all this money in the market, and she completely panicked and told her guy to take all her money out. And she lost like half of her money, and it was extremely serious.
Oh, and she never put it back either.
I don't think she did. Yeah, because she was so afraid of going through that experience again. And she just, bottom line, didn't understand what she had invested in. So, I mean, if there's anything I've learned from this process, because what I said to you in the very beginning was, why can't I just copy somebody else? Like, if people are making money from copying Warren Buffett, why can't I just copy Warren Buffett and stop this whole thing? And why do I have to make my own choices? And you said a wonderful answer, which was, you can do that, but you won't understand what you're doing. And so you won't know what to do if he takes his money out of a certain company, or if you get that information too late and you won't know it's too late. And if something goes on in, like, you know, the world as a whole, you won't understand what's happening. Like, for me to be able to make an informed decision to even like hand my money over to somebody else and have them do it for me, I have to know some basic level of investing information. And that's what we're learning here. I mean, whether or not you spend the time deciding on individual companies yourself, I think having that level of just understanding about what's going on in the market and the concept of investing in companies and the concept of investing in indexes of companies and what that means, and that investing in an index in the US market means that you're investing in the US generally, and just all of those bits of information are vital. So I think it's very important.
Well, okay, then I'll stand corrected and say, all right, the podcast is valuable for all of you out there who are never going to invest in a private stock because you're not willing to put the effort and the energy into it. Still, perhaps there are elements of this podcast that would be useful to you.
And I have an
addition. For example.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, let me just shake your confidence in investing in the index right now.
Oh. Okay.
By telling you that for 7 out of the last 7 recessions, which covers 50 or 60 years of the last history, a certain indicator has indicated with perfection that a recession is on the way. And the perfection is obviously a range of time. It's not predicting the moment it happens that the recession's on the way, but that within the next, you know, on average about a year or so, the recession will happen. And when that happens, the stock market's going to go down like a brick. And when that happens, what you have in your retirement account is going to disappear by anywhere from 30 to 50%. Hmm. And then if you don't know what's going on in the market and you don't have a good long-term sense of what you're doing in that index, then it's time for you to do what Daniel's great-grandmother did, which is panic and exit probably at the bottom and lose everything that you've worked so hard for in the last 5 or 6 years, and that will suck. So let's try to educate you a little bit about some of this, okay?
Yeah, I agree with that. So I've got some help. Can I talk about it now? Okay.
Yeah.
So I, after finishing our book, Invested, didn't really know what to do with myself. I knew I wanted to do investing, and I knew I loved writing about investing, but I didn't really know what I was going to do. And we just pushed the book out, and that was a huge effort. And then I missed writing about investing. So I have decided that I'm going to start a newsletter about my investing practice. So this is going to be, I've started it already. It's an email where you guys would get, if you subscribe, a description of my practice and everything around that. So all the stuff like my investing office that I put together, how I find time in the day, the stuff I'm looking at, the mistakes I make, like the ups and downs emotionally of investing practice, and me, like, you know, I spend a lot of time wandering around. So I write about like what I'm wandering through and articles and the results of that. So I started this a few weeks ago. It's been super fun. I haven't really talked about it publicly yet, but now I'm announcing it here on the podcast that the Invested Practice is out. You can find it at danielletown.com/newsletter. And I'm thrilled to get it going. It's not like a serious investing newsletter. It doesn't involve numbers. It doesn't involve valuations or pricing. It's about the practice of investing and how to fit it into a real life.
And I'm so excited you did it. This is really great.
It's cool. It's my first thing on my own.
I'm excited you
Thanks,
did this.
Dad.
Yeah. And I, you know, gosh, when the book came out, and as the book was coming out, I was hoping that you would continue writing, and because I just think you're such a phenomenal writer.
So
you write from, you know, you write like you talk, and you write like a real person who's thinking through things. And I was really, really hoping you'd take advantage of the fact that the book did so well, and so many people kind of fell into your orbit for a little while. And man, it's great. I mean, I have read your first efforts on it, and they're fascinating. I mean, I love reading
them. I know,
them.
You're so sweet. So, you text me like, oh, I learned something from your newsletter.
I totally learned something every time I read the newsletter, which is fantastic,
Thanks.
Right?
Yeah.
So congratulations.
It's really fun. And I realized how much I missed writing about investing, which actually was a surprise to me. I didn't really think I would miss that because I was pretty tired after the book was done. But there's something about the discipline of writing it down as I do it, which is really good for me. And to put that out there and have it be useful to other people just feels really joyful. So,
and there's something too about your voice. You have a unique voice in the industry because everybody in the industry is a profound expert or a self-professed expert, one or the other. And rightfully so, right? There, why would you listen to somebody that's not an expert? Except there's this phenomenal number of people who would like to listen to somebody who's figuring things out from where they're sitting, right? I mean, it's one thing for somebody who's a great mountain climber to describe the view from the top of Mount Everest to you, expecting somehow that's going to help you get to the top. When it's not, what you really need is somebody describing the view right there in front of your feet, and where do you take the next step? And I think that's where you have come into the market in a unique voice. And I don't know anyone else who's doing that.
And I don't either.
Really excited that a lot of people get a lot of benefit from listening to you figure things out.
Yeah, thanks. Exactly.
From reading
it's me figuring things out. Like one I wrote, and by the way, you guys, there's a whole archive. So every single newsletter, once you subscribe, you can read at your leisure whenever you want. And you'll get all the back issues if you're a new subscriber. So an issue I wrote a few times ago was about this big mistake that I made. I like jumped the gun and got way too excited about this company that I thought Jeff Bezos was involved in, and like totally went down a rabbit hole of wrongness because I was too emotionally excited. And I just wrote it all out because I was like, this is like exactly to me what investing practice is about. It's about making mistakes like this. It was cheap. I didn't put any money into it. It didn't take me too much time before I figured out that I had completely gone the wrong side up. But I learned from that I needed to change the way I read annual reports. So that was a huge, wonderful mistake that turned into a great lesson. And I think it's very useful if you can learn from other people's mistakes. They're even cheaper. So you can learn from my mistakes.
I mean, there's something really wonderful in what you're working on here that I think you're going to be working on for a lifetime, because I think there's so many people that need this kind of help. And I think many of them are women. I think men are more aggressive about going after this kind of education than women are, for whatever reason. And I think the irony here is that by the time many women are my age, they're starting to be in control of a lot of money. Their husbands have passed away or no longer really feel competent to manage the money. And here's this fully competent partner of theirs who is afraid to do it because she's never gotten the education she needs to really handle the job. And that's really an irony. By the time women are in their 80s, I mean, they control a lifetime of capital, many of them. And so, and as a result, the financial industry, I'll tell you frankly, preys on those women.
Yeah.
Oh, man,
I mean,
completely.
I've been in that room with a financial advisor who was telling me X, Y, and Z, and I didn't know what, this was before we started doing our investing thing, and I didn't know what X, Y, and Z were. And I was like, you know, a supposedly intelligent lawyer, and I was too embarrassed to ask what they were because I felt like I should know. and I didn't want him to think I was dumb. So because of that, I didn't ask. To this day, no clue what he was talking about. And it's the same situation for so many people. And you're right, especially women who are handling the money in the family or just deciding to step into it for the first time. It's like a really intimidating process.
And I've seen both sides of it. And this isn't limited by any means to just one gender, okay? But let me just say there's another side to what people do. This is more like what guys do, but I've seen women do it too. They don't know what they're doing. And some smooth-talking salesman type gets a hold of them as a financial advisor or for a project that requires a lot of capital, and they think it's going to make them a ton of money. And I watched a woman take her, I think it was $12 million and put it into a complete crapshoot.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh. It was just $12 million. She lent it thinking that the loan was more secure than taking an ownership position of this company, which it was
not. Please tell me she had $200 million.
All of it.
And the 12 was a small fraction of her savings.
Yeah, that's one thing. But no, this was a big deal. It changed her life. And yeah, she lost it all in 6 months.
Was it like a big percentage of her money or was it a small percentage?
It was a huge percentage of her money. Yeah. Life-changing here. And the least bit of knowledge that she would have had about the things we talk about, about analyzing a business with these basic things. Are you capable of understanding the business? Does it have a protective barrier? Do you trust the management team? And what is it worth? Right? And if she had done that analysis in the most superficial way, she would have never made that investment.
Yeah.
Never. She put her money into the hands of a guy who already had a track record of being fraudulent.
You know, I was just writing about you and when you analyzed Bernie Madoff's portfolio or his like track record or something, some documentation that you had gotten.
Or failed to analyze since it wasn't
available.
Well,
yeah. So I remember it was a friend of ours who had asked you, she was thinking of making an investment with him and she asked you to look at it. And I just remember you sort of saying to me like, I couldn't figure out what the guy was doing. So I told her she shouldn't invest because if you can't figure out what he's doing, you shouldn't invest with him. And I was like, really? I wouldn't have thought of that. Like, okay. I would have been like, well, I can't figure out what he's doing, so it must be intelligent. Which, you know.
And that's what people do. They think, oh, I don't know what he's doing, so it must be intelligent. And my friends are all doing it. And he makes so much money for people. Huge Jewish community that was trusting this guy because he was Jewish. And she ended up losing $50 million.
God, it just makes you
with
sick.
This guy. You know, 8 years after she had me look at this thing, I mean, it was so sad and so unnecessary.
But that was such a huge lesson to me that you didn't say, I can't figure out what he's doing, so maybe it's fine. You said, I can't figure out what he's doing, and that's a big red flag to me. And for some reason, I always like it was like this little moment in our living room, and it stuck with me to be skeptical and be aware of just like err on the side of knowing rather than not knowing.
Oh yeah, you guys and so many times all of us little guys are so super intimidated and in an impressed way by people who have titles, people who've been in government, people who've run corporations. And I just want to tell you, you know, I've had the good fortune to be able to go out and speak with on stage with a lot of these people who are super famous. I can tell you they're just people, all right? They're just like your neighbors. And the only difference is they've had a lot of success in their life for whatever reason. Sometimes they were born with, you know, it's like being born on third base and think you hit a triple. And it's like I just keep thinking about Theranos, this enormous scam that was just shut down.
I've been reading Bad Blood.
Which had, oh my God, it had former Secretary of State George Shultz on the board, and his own grandson was telling him, no, grandfather, this is terrible. Are they not doing something? And so you need to get out of there. And Shultz stopped talking to the kid.
Did you read the book or watch the movie or what?
News articles.
Well, there's a new movie out on HBO, which I haven't seen. But it's supposed to be good.
But it's a perfect example of how great titles and a you know, like a track record from being at Stanford or whatever.
But that's what's interesting about that case, though, is that she really had no track record. And she was here's what she had, and I've seen it with startups a lot. She was very personally convincing and charismatic, and that matters a lot to have a mm-hmm. founder who can be like the lightning rod of I'm going to change the world, and you kind of are like, yeah, this is the person who's going to really like make waves.
Right.
Yeah.
Elon
and
Musk,
by the way, she did.
Steve
so, you
Jobs
know, she
charisma.
Fulfilled that part of it.
And she had that.
Just not what people wanted. Yeah. But then secondly, because she had that kind of charisma, she was able to attract early investors who were very big in the world of venture capital. And then also these outside advisors onto her board of directors. And once she had these sort of social proofs, everybody else just followed that. And then it was follow on after follow on. That's how she did it. And it's pretty easy to do if you are willing to lie like crazy and be horribly deceptive and be a complete crazy, like narcissist personality disorder type of person. It's it's wild.
Or you just, I don't know that you even have to be that crazy. I think you just have to be afraid of losing and afraid of the downside somewhere in the process. My guess is that she had probably some scientists that told her this was all possible, and she bought the story, and then she used her charisma and raised the capital and brought in the social proof in the form of this amazing board. And all along, maybe the results were looking fairly good and it looked pretty good. And then it got to a place where she could no longer, the science wasn't proving out, and she was just trying to buy time, I think, by substituting alternate strategies that were illegal to buy a little time to let this thing come through, because no doubt she had scientists telling her they were just about to break through. And then somewhere along the line, they didn't, and she couldn't stop the
Yeah.
lie. She just
yeah,
was too
I don't,
deep.
I mean, the fact that she shows zero remorse is a sign of not quite being totally emotionally healthy. But you're right. That is the progression. I'm sure that is what happened. Is it was just like one more step, one more buying more time. And the book Bad Blood, which is really good, makes the point several times that that she was essentially copying what software founders do, sort of. You know, just going for it until you make it, like talking about something, even though it's like got a million bugs and doesn't totally work because you'll figure it out in the next 3 weeks before you actually ship, like that kind of thing. And yet you can't do that with medical devices. You can't do that with people's federally protected health information. So.
Well, man, I'll tell you, I've been in a situation where, you know, like Steve Jobs, Next Computer was effectively a similar kind of thing. I mean, there's like lots of promise about this amazing new operating system, which by the way is now the operating system for the Macintosh and is in fact incredibly amazing. And
what did you just say? The Next Computer is the operating system for the Macintosh?
Yeah. When Steve came into Apple in the late 90s, when he came back, he brought that failed company's operating system with it. Apple bought it. Oh, it's an incredible operating system. I invested a lot of money into software around that system because it was so incredible. But just to make your point, that software is full of this sort of vaporware kind of, you know, let's just keep going till we make it, right? Fake it till you make it. And often the product you make it with is completely different than the one you started selling to investors. And as you say, it's a lot harder to do that in the medical field. But Steve lit me up one day because of that. I mean, we had sold so many of his computers going out with this software I was invested in that one day he asked the head of sales there, Todd Rulon Miller, to have me come in and demonstrate it to him.
Yeah.
Did I ever tell you that story?
Like many times.
Oh, okay. You know this one.
Sorry.
Okay. Well, it wasn't positive. I had told it. My Steve Jobs story. Thanks for the many times remark.
Tell it again. It's a good one.
I'm not sure we've said it on the podcast. So anyway, what happened was that Steve wanted to see this software. So I went in to demonstrate it to him. And the engineers had just built a demo for me because I didn't know how to do the internet. And it was just stacked Windows, which I didn't even know.
It was stacked Windows? What does that mean?
And so that means that instead of when you click a button and say, go find this information, instead of going to a database and actually finding it, it would bring up the next window, which showed...
I see. So it was like layered tabs, essentially. Got it.
Right. Something you could do really easily on the next and build that demo. And so Steve caught on really quickly in my demo that the software was producing results too quickly for a real database. And it freaked him out. All in one split second, he realized in his mind, anyway, that this was vaporware. And now he was going to be the laughingstock, having sold computers to DARPA, right, to Northern States Power, to the LA Sheriff's Department, to all these big hitters who would then mock him for having vaporware that they could never use and they weren't going to buy his computers. And all this went through his head in a split second. And he saw that it was just Windows stacked, and he got really angry and told Todd Ruhlheim Miller to never let me back in the next headquarters again, or he'd fire Todd. And then he ran away. He just took off and ran up the stairs. And that night, well, Todd told me just to stay in town. And then that night he called me and said, Steve, talk to the engineers at this company and everything's cool. And he'd like to see you in the morning. And I said, yeah, probably because he wants to apologize. And Todd went, no, probably wants to put another couple of bullets in, but come on over anyway.
But I mean, you knew that you were showing him not what he wanted to see, right? So.
No, I didn't know. They just gave it to me and said, here, dumb person, go do this and say these things.
All right. So you're like, why are you mad?
Cool. That's what you get for being an investor. I'm like, I have no idea why he was so freaked. And then Todd explained it to me. And then the next day, after Steve freaked out about this not shipping, the next day he spent an hour with me walking around demanding that I fund the development of a different interface before this thing shipped because it wasn't pretty enough. And I was like completely perplexed and arguing with him for the whole time. And finally, I fell into the famous Steve Jobs reality warp and agreed to do it. And then I had to spend 2 days watching Pei-Li Wang, this amazing Chinese developer, and Steve develop a whole new interface, which I was looking over as an investor. And then Pei-Li took her team and spent a month building it and came back with it, and it was awesome. And Steve was just absolutely excited by it at that point. So,
and then did it work?
And then properly? It worked. Yeah.
No, it only took a month.
And the irony was Next didn't work. Next failed of all things. So I don't know, man.
See, there you go. There's my certainty example. Yeah. There's no certainty. Your product can be good. You can know that you've made the right choices based on the information you had, and it can still not work.
Yeah, that one scared me pretty good because I had a lot of your college money in that investment.
Yeah. I don't know.
I took it out of someplace safe and put it into this because, not because I thought it was so safe, it was because I haven't learned all my lessons yet way back then. And they needed more capital and I was their guy. So
yeah,
that was scary.
Well, you know what? It all worked out, Dad. I've been to plenty of school. Yeah. So we're good.
You definitely have been to plenty of schools.
All right. Can we talk about something else before we finish up here? And guys, by the way, I know that last time we promised to talk about wish lists and checklists and we haven't talked about that at all. But if you've been with us for any length of time, you will know we will get to it at some point here. Maybe next episode, Dad. What do you think?
No, I think we got to talk about inverted yield curve. I think we got to explain what's on the way and what you should do about it. That's
with
next.
The world.
With the potential recession, with the U.S. economy, with the stock market. What with bonds,
that's
what's coming? Like,
that's the world.
What's likely coming? And that will impact the whole world, right? In fact, the whole world's impacting us right now. They're slowing down a lot. China,
all right. Yeah, just no big deal. We'll just talk about the world. Right. So before we talk about the world, we got to talk about our book for a second.
Oh, yeah.
So we have a paperback of our book, Invested, that just came out and was in stores as of last week, I believe. And there's a little bit of a problem with this one, which was an error that was made in printing. If you look really closely, and I know a number of you have the book already because you've been sending me pictures of it, Buffett is spelled with one T. He spells it with two T's.
Yes, he does.
And our copy editors didn't catch it.
On the cover of the book.
Yeah.
And no one caught it.
Nobody caught
it. And now we have a collector's item.
That's right. So we have been pulling back, obviously, all of the books that we can get our hands on. The publisher is all over it. They are mortified, of course, and are pulling it back. But we can't get it off of the shelves of bookstores once it's on the shelves. For reasons past the understanding, they will not pull them off of the shelves. So with this collector's edition of Invested, the brand new paperback with the one T Buffett, we are throwing a treasure hunt. And you guys, we're going to make it a little bit fun. So to entice everybody to go and buy this paperback and get it off the shelves and reclaim this book so that it's properly reprinted with Mr. Buffett's name. And by the way, let me say, we have emailed him directly about this because we wanted him to hear it from us before we announced it publicly. I hope that he isn't insulted. He hopefully knows our great respect for him. He, we know, read at least part of our book at the end of last year because he emailed us about it very kindly and said some very nice things about it, particularly my dad's afterward about teaching his daughter, which was very sweet. So we know that he's seen the book. We know that obviously the hardcover is correct. We know how to spell his name. And we just feel horrible about this mistake. There's nothing we can do about it at this point. So we are trying to hopefully turn it into something good and get all the copies off the shelves that we possibly can with this little treasure hunt game. And then we're hoping that at the end of this week, at the end of the treasure hunt, which is going to go for 1 week starting today until next Tuesday, we'll have some good news to announce about maybe donating the books to a good cause. Or we may just destroy them. We don't know. We'll see what happens.
I think we should just keep them. I think they're a great collector's item. Who would misspell Warren Buffett's name?
Yeah.
Of all the people in the world?
Well,
it wouldn't be us, and we did it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's right.
Good Lord.
And we just have so much respect for him. So, you know, mistakes happen, and we're taking this as a great lesson.
So help us out. Help us out. Find one of these things, if you can, in a local bookstore or Amazon. Amazon has a few of them right there.
They sure do. If you order it from Amazon, you will get the misprinted book.
You will get the misprinted book. And man, we've got a few little incentives for
you. We do. So here's what we're doing. If you go and you buy the misprinted book, it cannot be the hardcover. It cannot be the properly printed book. It has to be the bad Buffett book. And you send in a picture of the book and your receipt to show that you actually bought it and you didn't just buy.
And show and make it a picture of you, like you with the book. Like,
well, it doesn't have to be that, but we would love it if you
I like it if you would. We'll put them up on
if you're cool with us sharing your image, take a picture of yourself with the book. We would love it. And we're going to share it all over the place. And it's going to be hopefully really fun this week. If you don't want your picture shown, that's totally fine. You can just take a picture of only the book and we won't share it. We promise. And you can upload this stuff. Wait, let me give you the details in a second. Here are the exciting parts. If you do that, you will get 3 months free of my brand new investing newsletter, The Invested Practice. So 3 months of newsletters every other week in your email box from me talking about my practice and helping you along with yours. You will also get a free 90-minute webinar, Ask Us Anything, with me and my dad. So what that means is Phil Town will answer whatever questions you guys have. I will bug him as well to answer the questions. You can ask me any questions you want. And we're going to set it up so that you can send in your questions in advance if for some reason you can't make that particular time, which we will announce again at the end of the week. It'll be soon. It'll be in the next few weeks. And then the final thing that you get is if you go to my dad's workshop, you will get to meet him specially and have him make sure to sign your buffet book.
I will absolutely sign your buffet book. And we'll try to get you really good seating at the workshop. And as always, the workshop for all of you who are listening to the podcast is free. And all you have to do is go over to rule1investing.com and ask for a scholarship, and we'll be sure you get one. Let us know you're a podcast listener, and off you go.
Yeah. So that'd be cool. So tell them that you're one of the people who own the misprinted book, and they will make sure to treat you specially. So to enter and get those three fantastic prizes and join the treasure hunt fun, go to investedpodcast.com/findingbuffett. investedpodcast.com/findingbuffett. And yes, with two T's in the URL, because we are spelling his name correctly forever in everything from now on.
We thought about spelling it Finding Buffet, but that just didn't seem appropriate.
It just didn't feel right. We didn't want to perpetuate the error. And the hashtag for this thing is Finding Buffett. So go online. My Instagram is Danielle Town. My dad's is Rule One Investing. Go online. We're going to be posting all sorts of fun things under the hashtag Finding Buffett. Go on Twitter, go on LinkedIn, Facebook, and see all the people who are finding the book in various places. We're going to post some clues about where some books are, and we would just love your help and support to get this book off the shelves. And
we're going to try to do this in world record time. So everything's going to happen fast. We've got a lot of people who listen to this podcast who are going to be out there scrambling for the bookshelf. So I would suggest you get going on it if you want to get the free newsletter, and if you want an opportunity to have the Q&A, and if you want some special seating as a VIP at our workshop, just get to it.
Yeah. And by the way, I know a bunch of you are already subscribed to my newsletter, which is so awesome. And you will also be able to get the 3 months free. We will just, we'll just tack it on to your existing subscription. So everybody will get the 3 months free if you enter our giveaway here at investedpodcast.com/findingbuffett. Okay. Awesome. So that's what's going on. And
until next time, when we tell you all about the coming train wreck for your portfolio.
And about and about the Finding Buffett success story, which I'm sure is going to happen.
Yes, it will. And we'll be talking to you guys real soon. I think it's time to go play.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
See you guys. Bye. Hi, guys. Thanks for listening to Invested. If you enjoyed this episode and you want more information, including show notes and more episodes, visit us at investedpodcast.com. There's a special offer waiting for podcast listeners to attend my 3-day investing workshop absolutely free. So just head to investedpodcast.com. Everything discussed on this podcast is either my opinion or Danielle's opinion and is not to be taken as investing advice, because I am not your investment advisor, nor have I considered your personal situation as your fiduciary. This podcast is for your entertainment and education only, and I hope you enjoyed it.